Welcome to our podcast, Forgotten Victims, The Forensic Interview.
Forensic interviewing traditionally has been associated with child victims. Over the past decade, there's been an evolution in the field of forensic interviewing where it's being applied to vulnerable victims of all ages, forgotten victims, victims with disabilities, mental health disorders, and older adult populations.
All right. Hello. We are back, and today we're recording from the NAFSA conference in Bellevue, Washington, and Scott and I are going to be talking with Tim Grant. Tim is a retired sergeant from the Massachusetts State Police, and Tim is going to talk with us a little bit about the importance of working on a multidisciplinary team and collaborating with Adult Protective Services. So, Tim, thanks so much for being here with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yes. So, and Scott's here too. Hey, Scott.
What's going on? You also forgot to mention that Tim's pretty awesome dude as well.
So. He's a great dude, and we love talking with Tim, and so we're excited to be having this conversation and spending some time together at NAFSA the last couple days. So, Tim, let's talk a little bit about your work in Massachusetts and the importance of working together with other disciplines from a police perspective.
Well, I was on the state police in Massachusetts for 36 years. The last 23 of that, I was assigned to a specialized state police detective unit that's attached to the Disabled Persons Protection Commission. All we do is investigate crimes committed against persons with disabilities. The unit was started legislatively in 1998. It really got up and running in 99. I joined the team in 2000. So from 2000 to 2023, I was assigned there. The last 12 years, I was the sergeant in charge of the unit. And we found out very early on when we started doing it, state police do things state police way, right? So we tried to do the cases on our own when we got these horrific allegations, and we very quickly realized we were banging our heads against the wall trying to do it by ourselves.
What stood out most? What stood out most is like, well, we need to partner with people on this.
It stood out that we didn't have the tools in our toolbox to address. I'll bring up one. This is somebody who was diagnosed with autism and was nonverbal. Well, I have to interview them. How do I do that? We had no way of doing it, and no knowledge of who to talk to figure that out. But we very quickly realized, using our APS partners, all these investigators that had been doing it for years, and one stands out in my mind. I did some training with him. He was a DMH investigator, Department of Mental Health investigator. I had never interviewed anybody that was schizophrenic or schizoaffective. He had interviewed thousands of people in his 25 years of doing that work. So whenever I had a case with him, everything went smoothly because he would say, no, we can't interview him at 9 o'clock in the morning. He gets his medication at 8:30. It doesn't kick in till 11. Let's do our interview at 1. Mm-hmm. All little things that I didn't know, I would have powered through, made it work for me, not for my victim. Not on purpose,
sure.
Just trying to do things within my time frame. Now I know it's not about my time frame, it's about the victim's time frame. What works better for them? Always keeping their needs above ours. And by working with APS, it cuts out a lot of the red tape. Our partners in Massachusetts, if we're working a case together, they're allowed to share information with me that I would need to jump through hoops to get. I'd have to be in court. I'd have to get subpoenas and warrants, and it just wouldn't work.
Who else is part of that multidisciplinary? So it's law enforcement.
It's law enforcement. It's all the district attorney's office have signed on. We have formal memorandums of understandings with all our DA's offices in Massachusetts, which sets up whose job, everyone has their job to do. Mm-hmm. That way, if something slips through the cracks, if we have a case that goes awry, now we can say, well, where do we need to fix that? How can we not let that happen again?
Sure.
So everybody has their job to do. It's the DAs, it's all the APS agencies. We have partners with, in Massachusetts, everything's bifurcated. So there's the Department of Developmental Services, which serves people with IDD. They have their own investigators. The Department of Mental Health has their own investigators, so they specialized in their field. And when you get into elders, there's a whole other department called AGE in Massachusetts that has investigators for elders and age-related disease. So everyone has their slot and everyone has their lane. But we're, you know, as the state police, we're working with all of them. And one of the things I've done over the last 23 years is train at all the police academies and train law enforcement in sexual assault investigations, and but to let them know what's out there for them as tools. And to you, every officer I've ever, or every detective I've ever worked with that I steered to work with APS, now they've become champions of that. Because they realize how much easier their job is if they're working with APS.
And we've heard story after story of this, certainly across Massachusetts and in other states too, where we hear, oh, okay, so law enforcement is like, okay, we want to take care of this, right? We want to, you know, get the bad guy, keep victims safe, hold people accountable. And then, you know, what you're describing is, well, here's a great way that we can do that, and it's going to make my job easier to do that, right? I think that's the really big piece, is like, you know, lighten the load for everybody by working together from the beginning. So what about states that,
Like other states, mm-hmm. that are like, just like when we talk about people with disabilities, when we're interviewing them, and they don't want to feel stupid mm-hmm. in the interview. Well, cops are people too, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of times they feel like, if I'm asking for help, that means I'm stupid and I don't know how to do my job. When I've always been a champion of, surround yourself with smarter people, right?
Learn from those who come before.
Right, bring in the
team. Why do you
think
I hired Stacey? Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Like, and some of the younger troopers I have working that are working there now, they're phenomenal, and they're clean slates. I don't have to break any bad habits, which is great. It's all recognizing what you know and what you don't know, and bringing in people that are going to help you with the don't know part, instead of powering through, which is what a lot of them do. And then they get frustrated, and then they say, well, this is going nowhere.
Yeah,
and that, and who
victims.
Pays for that? Our victims pay for that, you know?
Go ahead with your question.
Then. Well, I had another reaction to this, and then I have a question too. Lots to talk about. But the one thing that I always like to tell to my police officer friends too is, you became a police officer to be a police officer, right? You didn't become a police officer to be a social worker, but I bet sometimes you feel like one. So wouldn't it be great if you had a social worker to go with you who could handle the social work aspects of your police work, and you could really just be a police officer? Wouldn't that be a great day? So that goes back, I think, to that lane sharing that you're talking about. Like, we're going to work together, but everybody has their role in this investigation to make sure the victims get what they need.
I think you were going to follow up on other jurisdictions. So mm-hmm. stay on that thread, then I'll ask my question.
Okay. So because Massachusetts has some statute that we've talked about, some other pieces that not all states have, and the bifurcated system where everybody has their specialty. What about for APS workers and law enforcement out there who are having to sort of like do it all, right? They don't get the opportunity to have the specialty because that's not how their state or county is set up.
Well, I'd say, you know, you can start, you know, keep it local. So if you're a county worker in a county, start with one town and then build out. I was talking to one of the other attendees of the conference, and I believe he was from Ohio. Now, it's funny because we went out and did a training in Ohio for one county that's like three times the size of Massachusetts, right?
It's a big place.
From a little state. But he was saying, you know, I work with all these different local police departments. He said, one of the departments I work with is great, and they're on board with us, and they want to do the work. And he said, but some of the other departments, man, they just don't connect with us. We call them a million times, they don't connect with us. And what I try to tell them is, they say, well, the one that you work great with, have that detective call that other police department. Because sometimes police need to hear it from police.
Sure.
Like,
right?
Hey, this
like,
works.
Hey, this,
I've done
right,
it.
This works.
Yeah.
This is the best. Mm-hmm. Like, you want this person on your team. Sometimes that's what it takes, but start small and build out. We were lucky in Massachusetts. One of the spearheads of this, we had a state representative who had a son who had autism. So there was a bad case back in the mid-90s that blew up and made everybody look bad, and so that's why our unit was started. But he's the one who said, no, I want the state police embedded with the Disabled Persons Protection Commission. I want them working together on purpose, mm-hmm. not by happenstance, right?
Yeah. Or not just because they worked it out.
Right.
Yeah, and
but
the consistency
They need
all
to
cases.
Be there all the time.
Yes.
For us to build the specialty, so we know what we're doing. So we were lucky to have that state rep. And I always tell people, find your state rep that has a vested interest, mm-hmm. or find your state senator that has that vested interest.
And hopefully not wait for something horrible to happen.
Right. Do it before, the bad thing, right?
Yes,
every state has their bad, their horror story. Mm-hmm. Ours just happened to make national news because it was awful. But yeah, so it's starting small. Be successful with one, and success begets success.
What were some of the early challenges you had when, you know, just, it's awesome that it's in statute, but as we know, sometimes things in statute, like they don't really work in practice. So you made it work. You all made it work in practice. Well, I'm curious, what were some of those challenges in the beginning? How did you overcome those? Because I think as people try to do this and build multidisciplinary teams, and we'll say quote unquote multidisciplinary, actual formal ones or informally, there could be some lessons learned.
Yeah, well, when we first started, you can imagine people were leery. Like APS was leery of us because they thought we were trying to take their job. And we were leery of APS just because, like Stacy was saying, you know, they're social workers. And I used to liken it when I was doing trainings. I'm like, imagine if the president today said, here's a great idea. We're going to take the Marine Corps and the Peace Corps and merge them. Right? Like, what would the Marines say?
Different
no bueno, right?
Yes.
We thought, but when we realized, let's focus on what we're both here to do, mm-hmm. and that's to protect our victim, everybody got a better investigation out of it. APS got better investigations, because if I take charges, in Massachusetts, if I take charges against the abuser, that automatically gives the APS investigator, he could substantiate the case. Because all he needs is a preponderance. If I've arrested him, that's way above preponderance, right? That's probable cause. So it makes their job easier too. Plus, when they're going into a house, they could walk into cold calling in some of these houses. They could walk into a proverbial, I can't say.
Yeah, Daddy says we can
yeah,
swear.
Okay, they could walk into the proverbial shit show.
Uh-huh.
If they're alone, what do? Mm-hmm. If they're with law enforcement, we can take action. So it's safer for them too. And the other the big thing I think that states should get into is cross training.
Yes.
Let's train APS with law enforcement.
Yeah, well, you also need to know that helps as well, because also in the beginning, you don't know each other because the trust isn't there
right.
yet. And you don't fully understand what APS does. You understand it from your lens and vice versa. And when you're able to certainly be housed together, but cross train together, you start to break down some of those barriers. I think that's great. I also like what you said about the goal. Like the goal is a better investigation. The goal is serving these victims, and being goal directed can be super helpful. I like that.
And every training I do, and Scott, I think I've heard you do it at training, and Stacy's done it. But a lot of times I'll start a presentation with, how many people here know somebody with a disability? And invariably, everybody raises their hand. I said, okay, is it a family member? Is it a friend? Is it, they'll raise their hand, but it's usually somebody close to them. I said, okay, I want you to, and this is tough to think about, I want you to think of them being a victim of abuse. How would you want the police to do that investigation? That's the way
that's
I look at
first question.
That's the way I look at every case. Now, again, you guys know, but my brother is developmentally disabled. I looked at every case for 23 years, saying, this could be my brother. When you look at it from that lens, why wouldn't you ask for help to get the best outcome to an investigation? Everybody has somebody that they know that you can put that peg into that hole and say, that could be them.
So let's give them the best opportunity
absolutely.
To tell their story, to get justice, whatever that looks like.
And if I'm not the best person to do that interview, I'm going to get the best person to do that interview. That might be Stacy. That might be a forensic interviewer. That could be the APS person. Already has rapport with them. I work with a great APS investigator in Massachusetts that she knew. She worked in the North Shore of Massachusetts, but she'd been in the field for a long time. She almost knew everybody that was getting services from DDS in Massachusetts on the North Shore. She knew them. When she walked in the room, hi, Heather. And she knew how they, and she knew, you know, she knew how to get over hurdles and barriers. She actually, we were in one interview, and she apologized afterwards, saying, I knew better, I shouldn't have done this. She upset the victim, and he reached across the table and ripped her shirt off. And she just kept going. She just powered through, and I got my jacket, put my jacket, and she put her jacket on, but she didn't stop. And she's like, afterwards she said, my bad, I knew I should have made more space between him and I, and I knew he had these behaviors. But she powered through, right? Mm-hmm. I was getting ready, you know, I freaked out, yeah. You know what I mean? I was like,
protective,
oh my Lord.
Yeah. Kicks in.
And it's when you see people's first reaction to these things, new police officers, the frustration level is there, right? Police as a whole, you know, they're the Joe Fridays. Just the facts, ma'am. So when we say building, when you're talking about building rapport, right, and knowing what their needs are and all that, a lot of cops would look at it like, I don't need that. I just need to know what happened last night, mm-hmm. right? I don't want to talk about their childhood. I don't want to talk about if they can speak, I just want to talk about what happened last night. Doesn't work, right? Doesn't work. You have to build that rapport. It's going to take longer. It's not your, and you're going to need a team built around you to get the best investigation. They deserve it.
Mm-hmm. They do.
But even he's still being goal directed. If you want the facts, your ability to get those facts and have those that information be useful, that information be reliable, you're going to need to do some of these things.
But yeah, and if you don't, you're going to fail. And I've made all the mistakes. You don't have to make them. There's things out there that you can use to help you out. Again, we were lucky enough in Massachusetts to have your team come and train all my detectives on forensic interviewing. It's a technique that's going to work better with the population that we're serving, right? But we also trained civil APS investigators at the same training with law enforcement. There was everyone's passing around their information, right? So they know each other. They got to know each other. We used one of the big things, like you said at the training, is that they had intake operators also get trained. Hugely important. Mm-hmm. Like the better information we have from Jump Street, the better investigation we're going to have down the line, right? And it's not fumbling the football, let's say, right? Mm-hmm. So it's getting the right people involved, getting the right people trained, and cross training is huge. And a lot of times people don't even know these services are out there.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right.
They don't know what's DDS, what's this, what's that. Well, the APS person knows that. If you work with them, they can get you through all those acronyms and you know, what's the, you know, when they're talking about, well, they have a, what do they call it? Their daily, everybody has one.
ISP?
ISP. I couldn't think of the word. Thank you for the acronym. But what the hell?
Individualized service plan.
Well, yeah. Exactly. And I'll have a cop say, what's an ISP? Mm-hmm. You know? And I'm like, it's important to have that. That's a good thing to have. That's so much information.
You have to
right?
learn how to speak each other's language, though, right? Because law enforcement also has their own language. And it's important for APS workers to be able to speak cop, as I say, on some level, so that when you're giving information or trying to get information from a police officer, you're getting or giving whatever is going to be valuable or useful. So yeah, we do have to learn, and that's the cross training too. We have to learn how to speak each other's language
and know. And we've been lucky. A lot of our investigators now at the Disabled Persons Protection Commission are retired police officers, so they already have the lingo. They know the connections, and I see that in other states too.
Yes,
so they
workers.
Retire after 20 years mm-hmm. on the police department, and then they become an investigator.
Yes, I've seen that in many states too.
But how many have you talked to that were so frustrated now that they're now working from the other side of it, mm-hmm. and they're having trouble working with law enforcement.
I used to be one of you.
Yeah, I know you guys. Like, what are you doing, right? Yeah. There's still those barriers that we have to get over. But I think in the 23, 25 years I've been doing it, it's gotten better. Mm-hmm. It needs to get better.
Yeah.
It needs to grow, and everyone needs to be, because it's an epidemic of crime. People don't know. Unless they're involved, they don't know what rate that our victims are being abused. It just the one stat that I bring out, and I teach at every sexual assault investigator school in Mass, when I say there was a federal study that showed 68-83% of females with developmental or intellectual disabilities. So let's just take the middle number. 75% of women with intellectual or developmental disabilities will be sexually assaulted in their lifetime. 3 out of 4. And I say, what I'm saying to the police, So if you get an allegation of a sexual assault against a woman with a developmental or intellectual disability, odds are what?
Probably happened.
It happened.
Yeah.
And that's the way you should go at it, mm-hmm. right? Not looking at it like, oh, this case is ridiculous. She's nonverbal. She lives in a group home. It could have been anybody. She can't tell me anything. No. How would you do it if she was a 19-year-old college student?
Great
what
question.
Would you do then, right? Mm-hmm. Well, do it the same way.
A good case is still a good case.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And my mantra always, and you've got, believe it until it becomes unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Don't go in trying to prove the negative, which a lot of times they want to go in and say, this is going nowhere, and that's where it tends to go. Or this
becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right, exactly. They're not competent, they're incompetent, they're this, they're that. You're making excuses. Do your job and get it done.
Because it's possible, because you've seen it.
Yeah, absolutely.
For 25 years, as you said.
And nothing surprises me. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times the victims, we catch these cases by accident, right? We have victims that they don't know they're being abused because that's right. All I've ever known.
That is
so if you've been being sexually assaulted your whole life, and that's all you know, that's just what happens on Tuesday,
yeah.
right? When that guy works, I get sexually assaulted. Or the victim that I said in our forensic interview, she said 12 times in a 90-minute conversation, don't all dads teach their daughters how to have sex?
Yeah, they it becomes normalized. You know, it's interesting. I remember, and this was a 14-year-old, this was in Appalachia, Tennessee, real rural. She was 14 and didn't know that you don't have sex with your uncle. She didn't have a disability either.
Right.
So, yeah, there's these perps out there that will normalize this behavior, take advantage of somebody who is either isolated from everybody else or has a disability, who doesn't know the difference. And that's why these people are targets. That's why the data is what the data is.
Absolutely. And they don't have the voice that they should have. You know, when I'm saying people like, how do we not know about this? I said, do you think the people that we're talking about are a big, huge voting block? You know?
Good point.
They don't have that voice. Mm-hmm. They're getting better at it. I mean, what did they, 45 years ago, 50 years ago, what did they do with people with IDD?
Put them in institutions.
They locked them away in buildings that we never went into. And we have no idea what was going on. Now they're in group homes. But there's still, you know, a lot of people don't even know there's a group home on their street, yep. you know. But they were hidden away, and now it's getting better at main. There's more mainstreaming going on. There's more of taking the kid. My brother went to school. I walked him to school every day. He'd go in the building. He'd go left. I'd go right, and I'd pick him up at 2:30 in the afternoon. We'd walk home. I didn't see him all day. They were locked away in their corner of the building. So social isolation is a big reason why I think. This still goes on, but it's getting better. But
we need to take
bigger steps in making sure that they're protected.
Well, we're going to keep being a voice for it, and we know you are. But anything else you want to add? This is great.
I appreciate you guys inviting me, and I can't say enough about the training that you guys do and that you have.
No,
to,
you can't keep saying that.
Yeah.
No.
But you know, it would benefit anybody to take this training from a law enforcement or an APS standpoint, but. In a perfect world, you'd be teaching both together.
Yeah, do it together.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep, we agree. Great.
Thanks so much.
You're awesome, dude. Thanks.
Yeah, appreciate
Thank
you.
Thanks for listening. For more information about the work being done by Modell Consulting Group, visit our website, modellconsultinggroup.com, or follow us on social media.